Davies about her latest book in the Jam Today series, Jam Today 2, The Revolution Will Not Be Catered. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is Rashonda Tate Billingsley, author of 30 books, including Let the Church Say Amen, which has been made into a movie. But first, it is Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. That's next on KBOO.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the second annual Debtors Assembly Portland on Saturday, July 12th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Holiday Park, located at Northeast 11th and Holiday near the Lloyd Center MAX stop. Hosted by Strike Debt Portland, the Debtors Assembly will be a public gathering of neighbors and community leaders, seeing debt in a new way, one of social justice. Experts will speak on how the debt industries work and how they enable poverty and wealth inequality. And finally, organizers will lead group conversation on building creative ideas for local collective resistance against unjust debts. Again, at Saturday, July 12th at 3 p.m. in Holiday Park. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, July 3rd, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web, one of the last free places out there on the airwaves. We are going to be speaking this morning with Jeffrey Moniak, the man behind the Cascadia Education Project. It's an extraordinary organization that draws together quite a large number at this point. It's been around since, I believe, 1974. But at this point, we've reached really critical mass on a number of fronts here in Cascadia. The efforts and the work that the Education Project is doing is more important than ever, and the organization itself is indeed stepping to the fore. Before we get to that, however, we've got some headlines to plow through. Just to give you a little bit of weather for the holiday weekend, it's going to be cloudy early on today, gradually clearing. Eventually, we're supposed to see highs around 75. And clouds moving in overnight, lows around 56 for tomorrow. And Independence Day, partly sunny, highs near 77. And for Friday night, overcast skies, lows around 55. And Saturday, partly sunny, highs near 79. It'll be in that area, getting warmer on Sunday, highs near 80. And overnight lows in the high 50s to low 60s for the weekend. We have Jeffrey on the line. We've got a few quick headlines. Lessons learned. A note read: no mark bills, no transmitters, no dye packs. I will kill everybody. A police detective says a man accused of robbing a Portland bank told investigators that he was having a hard time with his habit and decided to put to work the lessons that he learned in, wait for it, in prison to good use, right? Too bad they didn't put him in university instead. Then he would have used those lessons. But instead, he used the lessons he learned in prison, robbed a bank. Maybe there's a lesson there that law enforcement and legislators ought to learn. It's possibly not a good idea to put people in prison because of what they learned there. Put them in university instead. And a new Koch brothers sinkhole has opened up, this one in Minnesota. Republican U.S. Senate candidate Mike McFadden has named Carl Kuhl as his new campaign manager. bang, there goes a couple more million dollars into an effort to unseat Democrats. And for five media outlets looking to tell the public how many oil trains move around Oregon, the information will come to the price tag. The bottom line, $218.75. That's how much the state is seeking from news outlets, including the AP and OPB and the Oregonian. That's what they're charging to find out exactly how many oil trains would be rolling through Cascadia. And approximately 100 people attended a Confront Canada Day rally in March in Vancouver, BC on the 1st. The rally began at Clark Park in East Vancouver. First Nations drumming, singing, "Decolonize means attack" was chanted. No pipelines on stolen native land. And then the rest of it is words we can't say on the air. But up in Canada, part of Cascadia, arguably, there is a great deal going on as far as First Nations taking back the control over their land and the decision-making process of what takes place on Indian land in Canada. It's a very, very exciting movement that's beginning to crest in Canada. And for the last 8 years, Pennsylvania has been riding a natural gas boom, no pun intended. And in a little corner of Washington County, some 20 miles outside Pittsburgh, EQT Corporation has been busy drilling close to a dozen new wells on one site. Soon, residents of town of Finleyville, who live near the fracking operations, complained, and the company attempted to buy them off for $50,000 each. Some takers, some people who turned down the offer. And our latest scourge is chikungunya. I guess it's borne by mosquitoes. It's emerged in the Caribbean. It's spreading fast everywhere. And if you don't like chikungunya, you can thank climate change, which we are, in fact, responsible for. And on that note, the need for education, educating oneself on the issues of the environment, the habitat that we share with the rest of the other species on Earth, becomes even more critical. Jeffrey, I am so pleased to welcome you to the KBOO Airwaves. It's about time. I'm really glad to have you on the show today. Talk about the Cascade Education Project. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, the mission statement says you offer educational, participatory, and collaborative opportunities to the public, the Cascadia bioregion. And the whole essence of this project is thinking in terms of a bioregion, not political lines. And what the work that you do seems to transcend politics in a very positive way. Can you talk a little bit about some of the educational, participatory, and collaborative opportunities, and how this works?
Yeah, well, we're basically, on the surface, we're a 501c3 nonprofit organization, but we try to function more as a interconnected web of community-based projects. So we try to offer fiscal sponsorship opportunities to projects that are starting up, that are doing things that are in line with our mission and our vision, but are also articulated by communities throughout the region and speak to what they're doing and the values that they hold based on local realities, which include the local culture and ecology. And so we really we thrive when we have a network of or projects supporting this organization that are doing things like providing opportunities for people to get hands-on and participate in things that broaden their knowledge about local issues, local culture, local ecology. And it really, we believe, fosters a participatory democracy. Gives people that opportunity to make those decisions that affect their communities based on things that they're learning through being hands-on with local projects in their community.
So this is really the work that you're doing is really sort of It's different, as it integrates, as you say in the statement, integrates novel meeting organizational processes. Talk a bit about those processes and why you saw a need for to evolve these new ways of taking on some of the problems that we are facing as a bioregion.
Yeah, the way politics functions today, it's very hierarchical. So what we're trying to do is give people that are participating in things, even if it's a local nonprofit organization, the opportunity to help guide that organization through the actions and activities of their projects. So we really try to include the projects through various types of meeting structures that are consensus-based, that are open to our projects and our partners to participate in. We try to create opportunities, like we just had something we call a project mixer, where we bring in we open it up for all of the projects to come in and discuss what they're doing and to get together and have a kind of a social opportunity to collaborate or to find opportunities that they can collaborate. And so by doing this, we're really hoping that the collaborations that are spawned through these networking opportunities will really build the community itself and will get a lot more done, or at least find a lot more opportunities for people to do things by these open opportunities. So a lot of it comes down to looking at how we can provide opportunities for people to empower themselves, to take care of the things that they feel at a community level need to happen, instead of looking to the state, looking to big nonprofits that come in and take care of those things for them.
So in some ways, arguably, some of the work that you do is subversive, because it transcends other ways of trying to accomplish some of these goals that have proven to be either dead ends or just not very exciting and not inspiring people to do hard work to engage in the project that you work with in a hands-on way. So in many ways it is subversive. What kind of, going forward, what's your vision for the education project?
Well, yeah, I think that we hope in many ways to be subversive in the way that we do things and to skirt the so-called industrial nonprofit complex, and to make it a more decentralized network of projects doing things that can bring them together and, again, foster those collaborations, which can meet needs for communities to work towards resiliency, local sustainability, to help people gain a sense of place. And I think that a big vision of ours is to see this network continue to expand through the bioregion and to reflect local communities and local ecologies by embedding these you might say, the nodes of the web within watersheds and local communities. And so to perhaps have local webs that are connected to a larger web across the bioregion, and continuing to provide tools to these groups, these projects, to make it more easy for them to facilitate this connection and these opportunities to collaborate, to really meet our needs, you know, from a local level and not having to depend on outside sources, but at the same time doing these things in the spirit of our local culture and ecology.
And one final question for you: when we are all faced with some fairly urgent issues, notably, of course, the oil trains, the prospect of these terminals. There are very massive corporations, many of them offshore corporations, and seem to be intent on overturning our existing, such as they are, our existing environmental protections and regulatory laws that were designed and put in place to protect the environment and control this kind of thing. Our rivers and shores, our rivers and oceans, and I'm thinking of Cascadia, this extends up to Puget Sound, which is absolutely is accessible. Can you just very briefly, and I want you to give the website too, if you wouldn't mind, we're fresh out of time. If you could give us the website, then others can go and have a look and get involved and get your hands dirty, get your hands on, and start working to protect the bioregion, because if we don't do it, who else will? You want to give that website, please?
Sure, it's www.cascadiaeducationproject.org.
Thanks so much for that. My guest has been Jeffrey Moniak. We have so many other headlines here. Cicely McMillan was released from Rikers Island. She was one of the activists who was in jail during period during we're fresh out of time. This has been Air Cascadia for Thursday, July 3rd, 2014. Rock Bridgman engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Rock. Kathleen Stevenson's the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Today on Flashpoints, U.S. pushes successfully for the remilitarization of Japan. Also, Native Americans roughed up and detained at Giant Stadium get an apology and a pair of tickets, but they want much more. More on the anti-choice implications of recent decisions by the Supreme Court, and a report from the Gaza Strip on the devastating and deadly impacts of continuing Israeli bombing there. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.